At Australia's most western point, Dirk Hartog Island, a group of scientists are working to turn the clock back 400 years. They're not building a time machine, but they are part of an ambitious restoration project called Return to 1616. It aims to bring fauna back to the island and recreate the ecosystem that would have existed there prior to the arrival of its namesake 400 years ago. Now tomorrow, 24 dibblers, now don't worry if you don't know what they are because I had no idea before researching this subject, a very small marsupial species will be released back onto the island. They follow the mass eradication of feral cats, goats, sheep, in what is one of the most significant conservation projects in the world. Dr. Peter Mawson is a zoologist and a science program leader at the Perth Zoo, where he's been involved in breeding these very cute little critters, and he joins us now. Peter, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you very much.
I guess I should get you to describe these little dibblers first up. They're cute, aren't they?
They are very cute. They're a small carnivorous marsupial. So they have a rudimentary pouch and they give birth to young that are, by our standards, very undeveloped. They're bigger than a mouse but smaller than a rat. Mm. As an adult, they might get to 60 grams and they have soft grey grizzled fur, tapering tails, a little bit fat close to their bottoms, tapering to a point. And unlike a rodent's, they're furred tails and they have black beady eyes and a very sweet little white eye ring around each eye, which makes them look like they've got tiny spectacles.
Now, Dirk Hartog Island, tell me about this place. Where is it? How big is it? What was it? And what have you done to it?
Well, if you look at a map of Australia, it's about halfway up the West Australian coast.
Right.
And as you've said, it's the westernmost point of Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the second largest island in Australia after Tasmania. So it's
how large is it?
Just under 61,000 hectares.
Okay. And what does that mean? How long?
It's about 26 k's from one end to the other, I think.
Okay.
So it's a fair drive, but unlike lots of places in Australia, there's no made road. So what seems like a fairly short drive takes quite a few hours to get from one end to the other.
So, okay, 26 k long, how wide is it?
About 8 or 9 k's wide at the widest point. And it's because it's a maritime environment and it's pretty exposed, it doesn't have any trees. It has some fairly large shrubs, getting down to smaller shrubs and then finally maritime grasses.
Right. And that's all been revegetated. So let's go back in time and talk about, you know, what this island was before conservationists sort of took it over. Because this is an interesting story. It was a sheep station, is that right?
That's right. It was a pastoral lease, like many parts of Australia, for over 100 years. And they ran sheep there. And then they'd ferry them back to the mainland when they wanted to sell them, or they'd shear them on site and take the wool product off. But at the end of the most current lease, the sheep were removed. And a program was put in place to then eradicate the feral goat population that also exists on the island.
Right. So let's talk about it when it was a sheep station. Who owned it, do you know?
Well, it was leased by a family with a very long history. They had, I think, over 40 or 50 years of continuous operation of that lease. And they've been able to retain a small part of the island as freehold, where they run a camping tour operation type operation.
This was a big job to remove all those sheep. Feral cats, feral goats, as you've said. How long did that process take?
The goats took over 4 years. Obviously, you could trap the ones that were easy to trap on water. Then it was a case of shooting the easy ones from helicopters and then capturing a few of the remaining goats, putting radio transmitters on them and letting them go back into the bush and find their friends. And then you'd come and deal with the friends until eventually you got down to just the last few animals that had the radio collars left on them.
And how did you know that you had them all?
Well, goats leave fairly distinctive footprints, and because all the sheep had gone off the island, whenever you see a cloven hoof footprint, you can be pretty sure it was a feral goat.
Right.
But that also meant that there had to be maintenance of some track system and knowing where all the fresh water points are, because like domestic stock, goats need to drink of fresh water, and so having a good idea where the developed water supplies were, but also where any natural seepages were that the goats were taking advantage of.
Okay, this is sounding expensive, Peter. Was it a?
It was. It's been a major
enterprise. How much did they spend?
I don't know exactly what the figure was, but it was in the seven figures job to remove the sheep and the goats and the cats. But when you've got an island so large, the opportunities that it presents once you've removed those introduced species becomes enormous. And there are 10 species of native mammal that are missing from that island that we had the opportunity to put back.
All right, so let's talk about this process, because this is really fascinating. You've removed the goats and the cats, they've all gone, and now you're going to put some of the native species back on. But you don't do it all in one hit, do you?
Well, it needs to be a staged process simply because you just don't have enough resources to put them all onto the island at once. And you also wouldn't want to do that because you need to be able to monitor each species as you put them on to be sure that things are going the way you want and to learn from the process. And also, some of the species that we're putting on are predators. Things like the dibblers, not so much an issue, but the last species that's scheduled to be added to the island is the largest carnivorous marsupial we have in WA, which is a thing called the tutich or the western quoll. And if you put that on first and established it, then it might make it difficult to establish things like dibblers or some of the native rodents that are scheduled to go onto the island.
And so what, do you put a little population on that you think is going to reproduce at the right rate, wait till they get up to certain numbers, and then bring the next lot in? Is that how it works?
Some of the species can be brought in at the same time, and others have to be staged. And then even for some of the species, you might want to, we're planning to add animals over a 2 or 3 year period, simply because it's either hard to get enough animals at one time to bring onto the island, or if you're going through the captive breeding process, like the dibblers, it takes you several years to breed up the numbers that you would want. And we're looking at 100, 150 animals of each species as your founding populations.
Right. And where did these animals come from, Peter?
Well, dibblers are extant in the Fitzgerald River National Park, right down on the south coast of Western Australia, and on two very, very small islands off the coast of Durian, which is about 2.5 hours north of Perth. And we've been able to, through the captive breeding program of the zoo, establish two other populations on islands, one on Gunton Island in the Recherche Archipelago, southeast of Esperance, and another one just on a little island just a little further south of the two Durian Bay Island ones. And we've got one mainland population as well. So we've got choices about the genetics we chose,
right.
But given that Durkartog Island is a maritime environment and it's a bit hotter there in summer, a good deal a bit hotter, the decision was made to use the Durian Bay Island stock as the founding bloodline for Durkartog Island. So we've captured animals from those two islands last year, and we've bred them in captivity, and this will be the beginning of the release onto the island.
And so the way the island looks now, is that how it would have looked 400 years ago?
Pretty much. The only significant change is the development of a few freshwater wells on the southern part of the island. There's none up in the north. And the building infrastructure that's been put there to accommodate the pastoral lease and the department's activities once they started this program.
Well, Peter, it has been fascinating talking to you. I really do hope that I get the chance to visit Durkartog Island one day. It just sounds like an incredible place, and I suppose it will be open for ecotourism, so it might get a lot of visitors.
It hopefully will have a steady stream of visitors, and people will be really amazed to see the range of species that we've put back on the islands and that they're readily visible. And that's one of the nice things about Australian native animals. And while the majority of them are almost entirely nocturnal, they tend to have little or no fear of people.
Oh, it just sounds delightful. Peter, thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
It's a pleasure.
Dr. Peter Mawson, he is the science program leader at the Perth Zoo.